In a few moments, you can hear how the sack of Rome horrifies the civilized world in part 8 of our series by the title of The Vatican Centuries. And then you can join Dominican preacher and poet Paul Murray, who brings us a reflection on the mystery of hope, in which he speaks to us of French 20th century poet Charles Péguy. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. I'd like to begin today by bringing you part 8 of our journey back in time to rediscover some of the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican throughout the centuries. A series written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. Last week we heard how St. Peter's presented problems, how St. Ambrose defied the Emperor Theodosius, while all the while Christian Rome grew in importance. Today, in part 8 of this series, which Jill has entitled Sovereign Pontiff, we hear of the sack of Rome, lamented by Jerome, and how Leo the Great meets Attila the Hun.
The Roman Empire in the West was in its death throes. After the Emperor Theodosius died, the gap between East and West grew ever wider, and never again was there a single emperor reigning over the two parts of the empire.
For some time now, the barbarians had been on the move, and soon the hordes were sweeping across Europe. As the 5th century opened, they had penetrated the frontiers of the empire, and in no time at all were camped at the gates of Rome.
In 410 AD, the invincible city, racked by famine and disease, capitulated to Alaric the Goth.
The sack of Rome horrified the civilized world. But the Goths were not the monsters they have often been portrayed as. They were partially civilized and some were Christian. Alaric did not wish to destroy the Roman Empire. He admired it and wanted to become part of it.
But the Emperor Honorius refused any kind of integration, and so, after repeated rebuffs, Alaric took his revenge. His only concession was to give precise orders that no churches be touched, nor those who had taken refuge in them.
Not so squeamish were the invaders who came after him. Hot on the heels of the Goth came a far more savage and ruthless figure, Attila the Hun, whose legend went before him in the nickname he received, the Scourge of God. He crossed the Alps and quickly eliminated the northern Italian cities. Rome held its breath.
But Attila never came. He hadn't reckoned on another strong personality. In the summer of 452, a strange procession appeared on the banks of the river Mincio, where Attila was camped. Messengers from Rome, led by none other than Pope Leo I in person.
A 19th century historian, Gregor Ovius, recounts how this historic encounter took place.
The city saw with terror that it was being abandoned to the monstrous fury of that barbarian, and the Romans were desperate. The Senate decided to send a message to Attila, and for this they suggested the Bishop Leo. Rarely has a churchman had a more glorious mission. The calm, venerable pontiff presenting himself to the most ferocious destroyer history has ever known, on the point of overthrowing the capital of civilization, is one of the greatest spectacles of history, one of the most sublime offices, and assures Leo of immortality, together with the gratitude of the entire human race.
No one knows exactly what the two men said to one another. But what is certain is that Attila turned back. Leo's action with Attila turned him into a hero with the Romans, who had watched helplessly while the emperor planned to flee the country. Moreover, on that occasion, the superiority of the spiritual power over the temporal was established once and for all.
Leo the Great, who reigned from 440 to 461, was in every sense a big man. Tuscan-born, he was Roman in spirit, with an inbred sense of authority. He was every inch a pope, and was the first pope to take over the old heathen title Pontifex Maximus, which the emperors had discarded. For years he fought for and won the supremacy of the Bishop of Rome over Christendom.
In 455, the Emperor Valentinian III supported Leo against Hilary of Arles, who had asserted the independence of the Church of Gaul. The emperor declared that if any bishop summoned to trial before the Bishop of Rome should neglect to come, he must be compelled to attend. This decree traditionally marks the establishment of the Pope's primacy of jurisdiction and his unchallenged supremacy as Patriarch of the West.
It was Leo who first formulated the idea of the Pope as the representative of Peter, and he was the first to lay claim to the plenitude of power. Theologically, Leo's greatest achievement was his dogmatic letter, sent to St. Flavian in Constantinople. In it, he set out the true faith concerning the natures of Christ, and it was acclaimed as the teaching of the Church at the Council of Chalcedon in 451.
Solid, courageous, full of good sense and a faith which knew no doubts or hesitation, Leo was the best man for the job he did. A man of his time, but with a very strong sense of the timelessness of his mission. He raised the prestige of the Holy See to heights it had never known, and it was this, together with his defence of the faith against heresy, his intervention with Attila and later with Genseric the Vandal, which earned him the title of Great, a title to be shared by only two other popes. He died in 461 and was declared a Doctor of the Church in 1754.
A peculiarity of St. Peter's Basilica, and one which is still evident in today's church, is that it faces the east. All the churches built by Constantine the Great face the east, although some, like St. Paul's outside the walls, have been reoriented. St. Peter's has not. The rising sun, comments a modern writer, continues to shine upon the main entrance of St. Peter's as if it were a Greek temple to Apollo.
Leo the Great was most concerned about this problem of the rising sun. In 460 he wrote, "Having mounted the great flight of steps to the basilica, the Christians turn round and bend themselves to the rising sun, and with bowed heads incline their bodies in honour of the splendid orb. We greatly grieve at this, done partly through the vice of ignorance, partly in a spirit of paganism."
But Leo could have had little else to grumble about, for Rome, no longer the seat of the empire, had become the city of Peter and Paul, and Leo proclaimed it so in his sermons.
As more and more pilgrims converged on Christian Rome, other constructions were rising around St. Peter's to cater for their needs. Monasteries, pilgrims' hostels, baths and residences for groups of foreigners, which were later to become famous as the Scholae, of the Franks, the Saxons, the Frisians and other peoples. But before then, Rome was to suffer yet more tribulation. As, the empire gone, the abandoned city plunged into the abyss of the so-called Dark Ages.
When the aged St. Jerome in Bethlehem heard of the sack of Rome, he voiced his anguish in these words.
"The most brilliant light of all has gone out. The head of the world has been cut off. Over the ruins of a single city, the whole empire has gone to ruin. The city which was the capital of the world is the sepulchre of the Roman people. There is no country without its fugitives from Rome. Even as I dictate, my voice breaks in my throat, and sobs prevent me from speaking."
Contrasting with the sad accents of St. Jerome is this lyric by the 5th century pagan poet Rutilius Namatianus. Originally from Gaul, he had been governor of Tuscia and Umbria, and was returning home because of the growing invasions of Visigoths and Vandals. His farewell to the city which had given him hospitality and enriched his culture has been described as the last masterpiece in the classical Latin tongue. The Romans never read his poem, and today the name of Rutilius is known only to a handful of scholars.
"Listen, beautiful queen of a world which you made your own. O Rome, welcomed in the starry skies, listen, mother of men and of gods. Not so far from the sky are we when we are in your temples. You scatter your gifts equally wherever the sun shines, on whatever shore the waves of the ocean break. The burning sands of Libya did not stop you, nor did the furthest extremity of the earth with its weapons of ice make you turn back. You made a single fatherland for different peoples. It benefited him who was without laws to pay tribute to you, because you transformed men into citizens and made a city of that which before was only a globe."
You were listening there to part 8 of The Vatican Centuries, a series presented and written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Jean-Patrick Lovett. A big thank you to both of them.